say it again because that's okay. Funny, but all right. Just finish.
Finish it. Well, I just think it's annoying that, like, so not only now have they got, like, oh, that film did well because it's got that sort of, like, set piece in it. We're trying to recreate that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got to the point now where, like, Hans Zimmer lays down iconic sort of music. I think Icon, that blah in Inception. Yeah. I think that sort of blast of low trumpet, brass, whatever it is, it's been so iconic now. It's just in every single trailer. To the point where it's not even in, like, just action film trailers. It's in all trailers.
Yeah, it's in Saving Mr. Banks. Oh, not that you have Mary Poppins.
But it's ubiquitous now. It's now going to be, like, the go-to place to
but
have...
But don't you find that happens? You get memes in film. Mm. So you get tropes which repeat themselves in trailers all the time, whether it's Fate of Black and... or the crash-cutting method at the very end of the trailer. So the trailer will start slow and build up to a crash, 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 crash. Fade to black, and then the credits
and then
of what it's going to be.
Yeah.
What they did with Lord of the Rings way back when.
Yeah.
And it made you want to see it because it was exciting. But now every trailer does that.
Yeah.
It's a little bit boring.
Yeah,
Woody Allen's films do not translate to trailer at all. Like, if you watch a trailer for a Woody Allen film, you've never watched a single one of his films.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't capture what's good about his films in a trailer.
And how about trailers that have moments of it? Like, the only thing I can think of is Iron Man 3, when they're on the top of the plane, and then Robert Downey Jr. kisses Gwyneth Paltrow, and sort of, like, falls off the plane and goes, "You complete me!" And then she chucks the sort of helmet off. She's not in the film. That moment's not in the film.
No, but that's frequently the case. They
it's like King Kong.
Yeah, they were put in things that weren't actually in the film.
Yeah, it's... yeah, I don't know. Is that mis-selling?
It's
could you
suitable, I think. I think you've got to
trace the Trade Standards Commission.
Yeah.
I mean, it isn't
a
thing.
But it's cheesecake.
I will have a little bit of cheesecake, thank you. So, these things are a bit of a common theme, in as much as I remember watching films in the 70s, and you'd see a trailer and think, oh, I've got to see that, and then you'd see the film, and never did that particular moment appear. I think Bugsy Malone did that.
Hmm.
But in fact, Bugsy Malone trailer was Jodie Foster talking to camera,
and that's what drew you in. Let's be honest.
I was a fan of Jodie Foster back in the day when I was a kid. Yes. Well, I'm still a fan of Jodie Foster. She's an amazing actress. Right.
I think directors should have David Fincher cut the trailer to Girl with Dragon Tattoo.
Right.
There's two trailers. There's the Paramount, or I think it's Paramount trailer that they did, and David Fincher cut his own trailer for it. Mm-hmm. And his own trailer is amazing. It sells it. And it's so... You know what I mean? It's obviously got artistic... The trailer should have artistic...
Merit. The only trouble is...
Otherwise, it's just selling. It's like... selling
the trouble is with...
I think the trailer is just selling the film.
The trailer should tease to a degree, but it shouldn't give the stuff away. But so many trailers now actually give the whole plot away.
Well, no.
Have you seen the film? Sorry, what were you going to say, Catherine?
No, I was just going to say that, we went to cinema the other day... I can't remember what trailer it was, but I felt like I'd seen the entire film, as well as every single obstacle and issue they were going to come across, and the resolution. You could just tell. That's exactly what the film is in about 2 minutes.
That's what people want, isn't it? They don't want to see a story. They want to know what they're going to get before they get it. So they want to say, oh, right, so this, I know this is going to be a film that ends well. Now it's not even that. Oh, I know these two characters are going to reconcile. I'll go see it.
Mm.
But they don't want to be like left open ended.
I often find that the general way this happens is not particularly
helpful.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm completely at a loss now.
Sorry.
I like it when trailers just give me the kind of style of the film. So I really like Audrey Tautou. I don't know if I'll say her name.
Audrey Tautou.
Yeah. So I really love all her films. Normally because it's done in a very certain style. So I don't really care what the film's about. I just like that particular style of filming and that kind of idea. So I'm just happy to kind of sell me that vague idea and not really know anything about the story.
True.
I prefer trailers to be more like
that. Are all her films like that? Because wasn't she in the Da Vinci Code?
Oh, yeah, apart from that.
Okay.
You probably wouldn't say that in
that
is, an
Tattoo
film.
That is an Audrey Tautou, yeah.
Tautou.
She says Tautou.
She says Tautou.
She doesn't say Tautou.
According to Ian McKellen, she says Tautou.
Oh, really? Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, on Parky, many years ago.
Well, that was a long
time
ago.
Probably this is such a contentious issue.
Yeah, so she's changed the pronunciation of her name over the last 10 years.
It's like saying Swymond, you know,
instead of Simmons.
Mm.
Or Ralph Fiennes. That's
Ralph Fiennes
is
awesome. That's a great name.
But you spell it Ralph.
Yeah, it's like Ranulph. But Ralph was always pronounced Ralph.
Oh, okay.
Back in the day.
Sure.
Frank, yeah.
Ralph Doyster Doyster, the first comedy ever written.
Oh, what's his name? I know. I can't remember his name.
Ralph, someone, is it?
Ralph Spall. Ralph Spall
spelled Ralph.
R-A-F-E.
Yeah. Thank you.
Clarify.
For that.
Yeah. So, no, looking forward to Noah, then, Noah.
I would like to see it. I don't know if I'll get to see it in the cinema because of time and money and stuff. Because there's a lot of controversy around it. But actually, in these films, when a film attempts a biblical theme and everyone says it's controversial, I watch it. If I watch it, I often think, well, that's not as controversial as some. Mm. It's just that I'm not that traditional a Christian, so my... You know, I probably, I don't know.
Aronofsky said that it will bring believers and non-believers together.
Mm.
I don't know why.
That is a very big statement.
Exactly, as soon as you said that, I thought, I don't know why
you'd want to
do
that.
Can't
have been
Muslims and
believers and non-believers.
In a given cinema, any given film.
Black Swan will bring believers and non-believers together. Yeah, I suppose...
Let's just have a hand count here.
The rest...
yeah. Well, Michael Bay, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Is he doing
is
it?
He?
It's being made.
Is
I've seen, the trailer.
Made one of
has he directed or produced it?
He's produced it.
Okay, so that's like slightly different.
It's still Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with Michael Bay in it.
Yeah, anywhere near
it. Yeah, yeah. Well, there will be a lot of explosions. And to be honest, the first film kind of didn't do that well.
What, the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film?
The pretty old one.
TNMT.
TNMT. It was just, they just abbreviated it to TNMT.
Oh.
Which sounds a lot like TNT and GMTV. It's just like...
It just,
yeah. So many people turned up to watch the film of GMTV. Feature length. So many disappointed
half
refunds.
I was expecting the sofa to be pink.
Yeah. No, I don't know. That's not.
So, what is the? Given that we've said that art has no function in a in a functionalist society, what is the function of films? Is that as art, or is it to tell a story, or is it metaphor? Is it to stir?
To bring believers and non-believers together.
Joe, what do you think?
I'm trying to decide whether it's film is purely to be enjoyed as art or whether there is another function to it.
For instance, Un Chant Andalou, Louis Buñuel,
mm-hmm.
does it have any function other than to freak out the viewer, the surreal elements of it? Who's seen it?
I'm not seen it.
Is that the
one,
the ants in the hands?
Yes, and the slicing the eye.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
Jim sent me that over Facebook once.
The Surrealists.
What are you planning on?
Birthday song.
That would have been even weirder.
Yeah.
I mean, in as much as does art have a function, but does film have a function, or is film art?
I think sometimes
I think
to like inform.
There's a difference between we said that art is useless.
Yeah.
There's a difference between function and use.
Right.
Art can have a function but still be useless.
Okay.
Function is just what does it do? You know, what does it do? And art can do something without that thing being sort of useful in a sort of evolutionary sense.
When you say evolutionary, what do you mean?
Well, just in the sense of, like, survival and...
Yeah,
you
okay.
Know, a kind of brute...
So you think you should keep can survive or art? Do you think survive or art?
I think we could survive. I don't think it'd be a very good existence.
Mm.
What was it C.S. Lewis said?
I don't know.
My favourite quote, though, is Churchill, when someone said to him, can't we cut the culture budget during the war, because they had a huge budget for culture, and the war effort obviously needed financing, and Churchill turned around and said, well, then what are we fighting for?
Wow.
And that is profound.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Because, you know, if you cut culture, then... It's about expression of... It's about...
Well, according to Woody Allen, art is why life is worth living.
Mm.
There's wonderful Apples and Pears by Cezanne.
Tracy's Face,
Sentimental Education by Flaubert.
I mean, I actually read someone's Twitter feed, their Twitter biography, and she said, and I thought this is quite interesting, she likes writing books and painting pictures because it makes life a little brighter. And I thought, that says it, doesn't it? It really, you brighten life, and, you know, in a sense, that is what...
That was Tracy Emin.
Not quite. No, it was a lady from Arkansas, actually.
But it can't just be, that's very self-serving.
Yeah, it's self-serving, but there is an element of challenge in art as well, which isn't a bad thing. But that also makes life brighter, being challenged, being provoked.
But so just planting bulbs in your garden.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
Well, brighter suggests that it's kind of illuminating what's already there. Whereas I think art is about kind of suggesting what might be possible. It's suggesting a kind of perfection, like a perfect way of being that isn't actually present.
That isn't prison.
That isn't present. Isn't present.
Isn't present. Okay. Right.
Let's explore that prison thing. That was interesting.
I mean,
art isn't about just illuminating something that's there. Art is grabbing something spiritual and trying to find its form in the sort of mortal realm. And
the mortal realm.
Yeah, yeah.
We've already cut to the chase with this conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that that's an interesting point you make, because I know a lot of people who say, guys like David Bowie, I don't know, Paul McCartney, great songwriters, they take stuff that is there. It's almost like a prophetic thing that they're doing. They're using a spiritual gift that they have to create art. Does art redeem? Does it have any redemptive quality?
No.
That's
why?
Only Jesus redeems.
Yeah, but, okay, so it's not up to art.
It's not up to the artist to decide if it redeems or not. Jesus redeems, and as spiritual beings making art, our art can redeem.
Jesus and the Holy Spirit can be inhabiting.
Our art kind of
can what?
Provide a window to what Jesus already does.
Jesus and the Holy Spirit can inhabit art, though, can't
they? Yeah, right.
Definitely. Yeah. Art itself doesn't redeem. It's just a window onto that kingdom, onto that kind of redeemed perfect.
But it does mm-hmm. hold a texture of. It does have a different pane of glass looking through that window than other forms of expressing Jesus' redemption does. There's something art has that other things don't. Otherwise, we wouldn't need to have any art at all. Mm. If it was just simply the actually saying the message of Jesus.
Mm.
Like verbatim from the Bible, and that's all we needed, which I don't think is the case, then we wouldn't have to have art or even sermons or even interpretation or. Yeah.
Hermeneutics.
Yeah. What?
I don't know.
It's making something that didn't exist prior to it being made. So it's making something completely new. I mean, there are other forms of. Like, you can say a truth, or you can. Say something that reflects God's truth that's always been true and it's been said by many people before and you're restating it and the truth contained in that thing. But when you make a work of art, that's something that up until the point of it being made didn't exist. And there's something, it's almost like you're participating in creation. You're almost kind of, I can't describe quite how it happens, but it's almost like when God made the world, like there were certain things that he made and certain things he left humans to uncover, which are still a part of his creation, but
so
he's kind of enabled us to.
Are dinosaurs art? Because we uncover them and they're bones and they take a structural element in our.
Okay.
In our.
Yeah.
I mean,
by uncover, I'm talking metaphorically.
Okay. Well, I'm talking literally. I'm talking literally.
So would you say all art is good then? All art is from God? All art's doing is uncovering.
All good art is,
well,
done,
but
is from God.
That's impossible.
Yeah, how do you define
good? Define it?
I think we can look at a work of art and say if it's good or not.
Through our prism of the Christian faith.
Yeah, but even bad art, Jen, is surely art. And then
through the prism of the truth, which we believe the Christian faith is.
But then there'll be other church circles that sort of won't accept certain things as truth and. I mean, like,
yeah, what is truth?
But to us, they wouldn't. That wouldn't be the truth. Like, we're trying to get
so
to
you're
the truth,
accepting that you're
and so we're saying that their perspective, which doesn't accept that, is not the truth.
You're perceiving these things through a prism of a particular worldview, of a particular interpretation of truth. Because truth cannot be literal.
I don't believe we're living in like a society where there are loads of truths and loads of perspectives, and they're all equally valid. I think there's one truth. And I'm interested in finding out what that is.
What is it? What is that one truth then?
I can't distill it into a kind of pithy sentence. I think the truth is, you know, ultimately what we read in the Bible. And there is a kind of gap between us understanding that truth.
Big time.
And, you know, there's a huge interpretive kind of gap, which is why there are so many different denominations and things. But that doesn't mean that they're all equally valid and that we should take all their opinions as valid. I think it's, you know, there is a truth that we can get to in some of those things. You know, if someone rejects, we've talked about churches that reject sort of Harry Potter or even the Narnia books. Mm. You know, I think they're missing it. I think they're missing the point. I don't think we can look at that and think, well, that's their perspective. That's true for them.
What is that?
Yeah, but they're wrong, in my opinion.
Right, so it's all it's to do with your.
It's subjective.
It's not my. It's not my opinion. I think there's a truth apart from me that I'm trying to uncover.
Right.
Okay.
And I think they haven't got it. And I think I've got a part of it that they haven't got. Equally, yeah. They may have parts I don't have. But that's part of my journey of trying to discover.
So then, back to the question, just to like we're back a bit about, is all art then of God? Mm. If you're saying art's unveiling creation, largely, then is all art of God? So then. Things that we would consider really sort of, maybe, I don't know, defunct morally or, yeah.
All art isn't of God because there's a lot of bad art around. And if art's bad...
Well, again, but...
How do you define bad?
Let's talk
examples. It's a binary concept.
Okay.
So give us a bad artist.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Cheers, I thought was quite good, actually. I enjoyed it.
I like Cheers.
Cheers is
a gentle comedy.
And it spawned a fantastic spin-off.
The best spin-off ever.
Bigger than the original.
Yeah.
Yeah, arguably.
Mash.
But what I love is watching people's careers blossom from those sitcoms such as...
Well, we really have officially...
Such as Kelsey Grammer's time. Or, you know, David Hyde Pierce.
I wouldn't really say Kelsey Grammer's career blossomed from Frasier.
Yeah.
No, from Cheers.
He did Boss. He did Boss.
He's kind of a standard household name now, isn't
he? Yeah, but also...
he produces a lot.
Woody Harrelson, whose career took off after Cheers as well.
Yeah,
was he in Cheers?
Yeah.
He was in Cheers.
I didn't know that.
He made a couple of guest appearances in Frasier as well.
I didn't know that.
Do you find, Catherine, art enhances people's perceptions of themselves or anything?
What do you
I'm interested in
whether it's a mirror or not.
I'm interested in art having an effect on people's ability to feel good about themselves.
Yeah, I don't know, I think it I guess what you're asking, Dave, is kind of, does it have the ability to make you feel good about yourself?
Yes, and increase your ability to do stuff that you didn't think you could otherwise do.
I think it does, but I just don't think particularly young people that I work with have ever got that opportunity.
Right.
I just don't think art is big enough to make that kind of noise, I think. Like, mainly because of the funding and all of that kind of stuff that goes along with it at the moment. I just don't think it's valued enough at the moment for young people to get into, unless you're really good at it straight away and you're established. Young people don't really have an opportunity
to unless it has a physical function, something that's utilitarian, people look at art and think, well, that's wasting young people's time, because actually we want them to learn a skill such as hairdressing.
Yeah. And I think it's far too idealistic that, like, the young people, that they
creative.
Yes, it can be, yeah, absolutely.
But
what I'm saying is that the sort of funnel you into an MVQ job type thing.
I think people just want to be safe and have security, and so they want our young people to have safety, and art just isn't safe enough at the moment.
So therefore,
we make them become bankers, which they might be very good at, but they might not really enjoy. But it's safe, and you know that you're okay with that.
Do many of your young people become bankers?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, all of our apprenticeships are based basically with banks.
Oh, wow, I never knew that. Okay.
Speaking of parents, David and Amanda.
Yeah.
How do you feel about your child wanting to pursue, namely Jeremy, wanting to pursue a career in art? Do you think that's... I don't mean to, you know...
put us on the spot.
Put you on the spot, but, you know, do you think that's something that's, you know...
Well, I would say that was clearly a gift from an early age, as early as two, something
in Jeremy's
that
case,
Jem
yeah.
and Toby actually and Toby, spent
yeah.
a lot of time and were drawn to. It wasn't something we pushed under their nose, it wasn't something we encouraged particularly. And so I kind of have the perspective, although I have a lot of friends who would be saying, but what's he doing now? What's he doing now? Is he going to teach? You know, what's the point of this? How much did he earn? Blah, blah, blah. I kind of have that thing that if you have that gift and if there's something within you that you want to express, then how terrible would that be if you lived your life and thought, I never even gave that a shot or I never even tried to express that? So although that doesn't fit with, you know, an economic kind of progression or the normal things that people do when they come out of school or uni, there's something that I kind of think, encourage it, let's see where it goes, give it a try. Life can be short.
See, I consider to be very fortunate to have parents like you.
Thank you.
Just going to go out there and say,
well, it's Mother's Day.
It is.
It is Mother's Day.
Happy Mother.
Apt.
I don't know, that's very fortunate, because I don't think everyone has, you know...
But you could spend your life kind of doing it. I mean, I'm not saying you don't need to earn money to, you know...
to get on.
And that kind of stuff, basic stuff. But you could spend your life doing a job, to do a job, to go to work, to get up, to buy the food, to...
give you strength.
Going to go to work, to the,
yeah.
And just be stifled, and all those creative things would never... you know, have space to...
I think the issue is that art is seen as something that's exceptional, and it's seen as like the upper echelon of human endeavour and intellect, and so it means, I mean, Britain has got like a genius culture problem from Shakespeare to Andrew Lloyd Webber. It's like the throw-ups of genetics rise above and create the things that all of the sort of flock, common stock, sort of look up at and marvel at, whereas it's just an entire, it's not a godly principle whatsoever. It's an entire misnomer. Art is, and art and artists and creative art is for everybody, regardless of competence, regardless of ability or skill. And yeah, and if you are particularly gifted, doesn't mean you're an artist.
Yeah.
If you're not gifted, doesn't mean you aren't either. But the issue is that we're obsessed with revering people in this country, and whereas when we look back at the history books, it's sort of nostalgic. It's like they're true British metal. When you're living in the midst of it, it's actually no, it's not true British metal. It's come on, there's a flock of young people who are sleepwalking into doing whatever the economic model at the time says they're going to do. I mean, CC Skills, which is the government's arm, their sort of artistic arm, is infinitely smaller than all of, like, do you know what I mean? Like, because the whole thing's weighted towards private enterprise being able to support young people in their apprenticeships, which is why you've got banks like Barclays and all that, and British Gas all pulling the strings at, like, charities that are getting young people in, because they've got the money to do it. And it weren't artists that screwed the country.
What's interesting about the genius culture is, though, as you rightly say, we have a genius culture, but... I remember they did the 10 greatest Britons of all time, and Isambard Kingdom Brunel was up there. But at the time of his life, he wasn't revered. A lot of people thought it was a pain in the proverbial, because he was very provocative. He was always hustling for money, always trying to wheel and deal.
Provocative proverbial.
Indeed. He was wheeling and dealing one person against the other, and he was very good at getting jobs done and creating amazing structures. His engineering was second to none, but at the time it wasn't recognised. It wasn't until several decades after his death, I was listening to a History Extra podcast by the BBC, that Brunel actually was recognised as something quite exceptional. And there he is, Kenneth Branagh on the Olympic, what's its name, you know, giving it large. It would have been Mark Rylance, but sadly he couldn't make that particular gig. But it's just interesting, there these great, great, great people are celebrated as the one-off genius of Britain that shapes the modern nation. Which
has
to
he
extent
been on the
true,
back of a £10 note? Or £5 note?
You know, yeah, I think Brunel has been on a piece of...
Not clear.
Yeah.
I think, we're quite a sort of historically minded kind of culture. Like we look back on the last sort of few hundred years and kind of we pick out these geniuses and we kind of aspire to create similar people in our current society. Or... So, I mean, the kind of, this idea of the undiscovered artist, the person who's unknown in their lifetime, the kind of Van Gogh sort of character who's rejected by their the people
they
around
might
them.
Write musicals and stuff that no one's ever heard
of. But they're sort of picked up after their death.
That
just doesn't exist in our culture because everybody's trying to find the Van Gogh. They're trying to find the person who's struggling and not able to make it.
If there isn't one, they'll just make one.
Yeah, exactly.
Or they will take a child prodigy and say, this is an amazingly prodigious child. As frequently they are incredible, but is that art? In the case of a young child artist we watched a programme about, he was an amazing painter at a very young age.
One of the things that we say as we come to the end of the Crossroads thing is, greatness is not achieved by accident, it's achieved on purpose.
Mm.
But what we're thinking about is sometimes it's the small things, the unseen things that nobody else might ever notice that could have an amazing impact on somebody.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be out there. I don't have to invent the light bulb, but I could have a significant impact on someone else's life that no one else would ever see.
The spiritual significance of art obviously is overlooked in art because it's you make art and it's introspective largely. But if in the right hands, the spiritual significance of art, we don't know what's going on. Do you know what I mean? We don't know the ramifications of doing whatever you want to do.
Yeah.